Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Thank you for joining us today. My name is Bruce Norris, and we are privileged to have Leslie Appleton-Young, Chief Economist and Vice President of the California Association of Realtors. Leslie, we welcome you to our show.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
Why don't we describe the difference between a realtor and a licensed broker? Could you do that for me?
Well, a licensee, essentially, at least I'm familiar with California, needs to take three classes: the fundamentals of real estate and the principles, and then two other classes, and then they are able to get a license. A realtor is a member of what we call organized real estate, which includes the local association of realtors, the state association, which is my group, and the national association. And one of the things that distinguishes them is that they do adhere to a code of ethics. There's, you know, mediation and arbitration that goes on when difficulties arrive, and there's a whole array of services, including, you know, a legal hotline here at CAR. Forms are provided as a benefit of membership. So there's a lot of depth to the membership that provides tools to enhance professionalism in transactions.
If you just have a sales license, can you be a realtor, or do you need to be a broker?
No, you can be agents or brokers. This change happened maybe 20, 25 years ago, where both brokers and agents are members of the association, not just the broker.
Okay. Has the membership exploded in the last few years due to California doing so well?
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at the last 35 years, there's about a two-year lag between a peak in the market and a peak in membership. So our membership actually peaked in 2006. We had about 210,000 realtors in California, and I believe the number of licensees was well over 500,000.
That's a lot of people. I've heard those statistics where nearly one in, what, five or seven people have a license.
Right. I attended a seminar recently where the futurist was saying in 20 years, every household in California will have a realtor in it. So I hope that's not true. But
I'm sure everyone does.
Right.
Talking about the future, how has the Internet changed the perception of the customer? Do they think they still need a realtor, or do they think they can handle this themselves?
Well, I think the statistics kind of tell the tale here, and the great majority of home sellers and home buyers still utilize a real estate professional. And what we find is that more and more buyers and sellers are going online to do research first. And they're not just going to the in-house, you know, realtor.com. They're going to Zillow and Trulia. You know, everyone's interested in what their home is worth and what their neighbor's home is worth or what their boss's home is worth. And certainly for buyers, they're doing research and looking at neighborhoods and comps and so on and so forth. But, you know, most of the time when they get serious and are ready to either buy or sell, they actually want, believe it or not, somebody to talk to. And they find that working with a realtor is the way to go. It's also interesting that, you know, certainly on the sell side, for sale by owners, which I think historically are maybe around 10% of the market, something like that, when the market slows, the percentage of FSBOs actually goes down because it's harder to sell and more important to get someone who knows how to market. Market
Absolutely.
The home. But there's no doubt that there's a lot more information out there, and we certainly spend a lot of time in our association looking at the net generation, the X's and Y's, and how they're dealing with information and what their expectations are. And certainly I think I can generalize quite comfortably and say in every single industry, consumers' expectation of service and service delivery and quality is higher than it's ever been.
As an investor, and I am also a realtor, I would never even list my own property, to be honest with you. I always use somebody that is competent in that line of work. So I'm in full support of having a professional deal with the real estate. Is it normal that membership would decline as the real estate business becomes more challenging?
Absolutely. You know, we've had a dramatic influx of new members. I would say about 40% of the members of our association have been in the business 3 years or less. And I've kind of, in a funny way, described them as they come in with a few of the DNA sales, which are relatives who are using their nephew or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But after the kind of family tree has been shaken, it's a very tough business to be successful in long term. And I don't mean to say that there aren't new people coming in who aren't doing great, because there are. There absolutely are. But it's definitely a tough business. Now, we projected a decline from the 210 last year to about 185 this year, and I think that's going to be way too conservative. I think we'll be 190 or maybe a little above. And I think one of the things that might be tempering things, at least temporarily, is that because real estate has been so hot and such a hot topic since 2002, 2003, you have a lot more people that are managing their own portfolio and may become realtors just to do that. So I would call them maybe the hobbyist category. And I don't have any hard data on this. This is really more anecdotal. But, you know, a real estate license is a 4-year license. A membership in the association to be a realtor is a one-year membership. So we may see some stickiness in the fallout. But I think anyone that looks at the transaction level and the number of realtors would have to conclude, and certainly the number of licensees, that we've got over capacity in the industry right now.
I carefully read your job description, and it sounds like you're kind of charged with the responsibility of telling the membership what's next. Would that be correct?
I try. Yes.
No, well, that's a hard.
To the extent that that's possible, and it's challenging.
It is challenging. In 2006, you were quoted saying, "I've stopped using the term soft landing. I'm looking for a new moniker." So let me ask you: have you found one, and how would you describe what California is going through?
No, you know what? I'm not doing monikers anymore. And actually, soft landing wasn't my moniker. I think it came from the Fed chairman at the time. And as I look at the state right now, the indisputable fact is we've got a number of distinct regional submarkets operating. So generalizing the California experience right now is very, very difficult. The one generalization is everybody's down from last year. Last year we had a 23.6% decline in sales after having kind of a very high plateau in 04 and 05. And our forecast is for a further 7% decline in 2007. So while the worst may be over for most regions in the state, but not all, we don't think we're out of the woods yet by any means. And there certainly is a lot of, as I mentioned, regional disparity. If you look in the Bay Area, inventory is relatively tight. If you look at Southern California, LA's a little bit more than normal. Orange County and San Diego are all at about a 10-month supply on the market. Long-term average is 7. When you look at the inland, starting in the Inland Empire and going up through the center of California, that's the area where we're going to be watching most carefully. And you may have seen the headlines in recent weeks about the level of foreclosures. And in most of these areas, they're coming up from a very low level. So the year-over-year increases are, you know, 1,000% and 800%. And it's part of that is, you know, being amplified by the fact that you're coming off a low base. But all that being said, there is no doubt that there is a price that will be paid for the amount of new construction and the amount of investing and flipping and the amount of homeowners that got into homes with mortgages that they weren't fully cognizant of what the adjustments were going to happen. So
okay.
I think that's the big unknown going forward.
Do you feel that we're in for a price hit or do you think we'll be spared some of that?
Well, I think it depends on the region. You know, I think in the Bay Area and coastal LA, prices are holding up pretty well. I think in the inland areas where you have existing homes competing with the new housing stock that's unoccupied, prices are going to be a lot softer. And if you look at, DataQuick comes out with their really great data combining existing and new. And if you break that out, you'll see that you've had pretty dramatic declines on the new side because a new home is unoccupied inventory for a builder that needs to be moved quickly through, you know, upgrades or discounts or whatever it might be. For a homeowner, that's, you know, their life.
Yes.
Their home is a different story. So that definitely is an issue.
Other than prices going up, what are realtors usually told to say to a buyer to say, you know what, owning a home is still a good idea?
Well, I think there's, people want to own homes. I mean, I don't think that the selling home ownership is much of a problem. If you're talking about timing, a lot has to do with the, life cycle of a family and how long they're planning to be in the home. And I think one of the things that gets a little bit dangerous is when people look at homes as an alternative to buying a stock or a bond. And it's not that for people that are, it's their primary residence. And they have to look at all the variables, where they are with their family, what rates are, how long they're going to be in the home, all of those things go into it. And most of the realtors I know are not shy about saying, gee, this may not be the best time for you.
which is a really fair thing to do, which I applaud if they do that. I really do. I'm an investor, and I do feel the prices are going to go down, and I have not sold my residence because I own it for other reasons.
Right.
And so, yes, you're right. There's a lot of reasons to own a home other than the economic side. It's a great plus when it all goes up.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the dangers that happened the last few years is people said, oh, my goodness, my home appreciated 20% last year and the year before. So as I look forward the next 5 years, I can count on. And, one of the best things that realtors can do today is to educate their clients about the cyclicality of the housing market, because we all know it goes up and it goes down. And in the long term, it's hard to find anybody who is sorry they bought land or a home in California. It's difficult. But again, if you're buying four houses in a new community to flip in 6 months and, that's your expectation that's how you're going to get rich and the market changes, shame on you for not being an informed investor.
There was a report, and I didn't catch the name. It was actually on the radio as I came in this morning, that there was 15% of all transactions in San Diego were sold for less than they bought the property for. 7% in Orange County. So
right, right.
And it's repetitive in a way. I guess the thing that I think is missing in a lot of the forecasts that I've read from NAR and CAR and the Builders Association is I haven't seen a warning system in place that's told people in advance very much that this was coming. What is a category? What would be one category you would look for and say, okay, now that domino has fallen, we're in for a problem time?
I think you bring up a really good point, and that is it's tough calling turning points. And I will say that for our forecasts for both 2005 and 2006 called for a decline in sales. And certainly not the 23.6% that actually happened in 2006. But for 2004 and for 2005, 2 years before the actual decline happened, we were saying this can't keep going. We thought rates would go up. We thought affordability would really start to squeeze the market. And, it's great as a forecaster to be able to say my forecast was wrong, but you're going to like it even better. and then all of a sudden, it falls off. So it's really tough to answer that question. And I think if anybody could do it right, they'd have the crystal ball. I mean, certainly there have been people that have been calling a bubble in the housing market since 2001.
Well, and that's
you know,
way
and that's
too early.
The question: are they the right? You know, even though it took 5 years to happen, were they right?
No.
I mean, I don't. Not at all. It's your call, you know. But it's easy to call a downturn when things are going up because of the history of economic cycles. You know that it's not going to last forever, but calling the actual time in which it happens is hard. One of the things I did is I looked back, hindsight obviously being 2020, to figure out what did happen. And as I look back at the economic data, between August and September of 2005, you had a lot of things kind of come together and create a tipping point. And the reason I focused on that time period was because the housing market started to slow in California the fourth quarter of 2005. That's when you started to have sales being below where they were a year ago.
Now, I have my opinion of why that occurred. Why do you think that occurred?
Well, I think there were a couple of things. One is that consumer confidence dropped 15 points between August and September. That was the largest one-month decline in confidence in 15 years. And I personally have a tremendous amount of respect for how, even though how consumers feel doesn't always translate into how much they spend and so on and so forth, how they're registering their unease about the world. And that was, you know, remember we went into Katrina. We also had an uptick in mortgage rates after the Fed tightening for quite some time. We also had a uptick, about a doubling in our unsold inventory. So from my perspective, you had a number of key factors coming together that tipped.
Well, that inventory being unsold, to me, is reacting to something. It's not inventing itself. So
yeah.
In other words, that chart is reacting to, and this is my theory.
Yeah.
The affordability chart gets a lot of heat, and I think it's the most valuable chart to determine a downturn. Let's talk about affordability through the eyes of the California Association of Realtors, because the way they describe it is that it represents the well-being of the real estate market. Can you expound on that? Because I really have a very different opinion. I think that means
who says that?
Oh, every time that Carr puts out anything to do with affordability, it said word for word that I can even read it because I wrote it down. You refer to affordability as the most fundamental measure of housing well-being. I think you mean that as affordability is going up, that's a good thing. More people can afford the home, the better it is. Is that true?
Well, I think it's yes, but the reason really has to do with job growth. And I think for us, I remember when I started here so many years ago, one of the leaders of our association said, you know, housing affordability is the Achilles heel of the California economy.
What does that mean, though?
Well, it means that if you don't have housing if you're not able to adequately house the full spectrum of workers that you need to support of a supportive community, it's really difficult to maintain a quality of life. You know, it's for everybody. It's like if your teachers and firemen and policemen can't afford to live in the communities where they work, that's a problem. If companies can't get the employees that they need to work where they're located, they're going to move somewhere else. And, you know, this is kind of a cyclical issue in California, but you did have companies moving, you know, call centers, for example, to Phoenix and to Texas, partly because of the cost of the labor, and the labor couldn't live close to where they worked because housing was so expensive. One of the reasons the Sacramento region developed in the early 90s was because people were priced out of the Bay Area during the housing boom of the late 80s. They moved. You know, there's a lot of new development that was happening in Sacramento even back then. And then you had companies like Hewlett-Packard and others creating a mini Silicon Valley outside of Sacramento. That was jobs following housing driven by the lack of housing affordability in the Bay Area. And our perspective has always been, if we don't address this issue in our state, people will be leaving the state, and that's happening, you know?
it's happening. You're right. You do get to a point. In 1998, the then chief economist wrote an article, and it was the theme, are we having an affordability crisis? And it was written in 98.
Mm-hmm.
And then prices nearly tripled after that. And there seems to be such a fear of affordability declining, but if you look at the history of affordability declining, it accompanies price explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And affordability going up always is accompanied by price declines or
right.
flat markets.
Right.
So why does that represent well-being? I'm an investor or I'm a homeowner. I would think well-being is defined as I've just made a good investment and I have equity.
Well, I think that the issue is really how you want to define this issue of well-being. And the reality is the rapid price appreciation of housing has benefited a huge segment of the population, homeowners. And it's really this gap between the housing haves and the housing have-nots that's the issue. You are absolutely right. If you are a homeowner, if you are an investor, and the price goes up, you want housing to be as unaffordable as possible because you are already in the door. Housing affordability is a much longer-term issue related to the fundamentals of the economy. And you're right. I agree with you. I don't think it's appropriate to imply that your well-being as an investor, as a homeowner, is related to the Housing Affordability Index. But certainly the long-term viability of the California economy
okay.
is tied to affordability.
Okay.
And I think that's the crucial distinction.
I wish there would be some maybe change in the verbiage of that, because here's what I thought in 98. And I called at the time and wished to debate the gentleman that wrote that, because I thought the article was so threatening that if I was a renter, I would not become a homeowner because of that article. So because I really thought it was the impending doom. When this happens, California loses jobs and businesses move out. If I was a renter, I'd look at that and go, oh, well, now it's not the time to buy because affordability is going down. So it really had an opposite effect.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you for your perspective. We'll have to look. I mean, it's a complex issue.
It is. It is. And I understand the intent is trying to get more people in the beginning rung. And I think that's very important. We're going to have two interviews. And on the next one, we're going to concentrate a little bit on maybe some creative ways to get some people into the first rung, because I think we're going to need some creativity. The last question we're going to have time for in this segment, there was some data that came out about California foreclosures. The trustee sales is the final process in the foreclosure process in California. That went up 800% year over year. And you're right, it started out at a small number. It is no longer a small number. The notice of default, though, only increased 148% for that same quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Why the huge difference in percentage between an increase in notice of default and then the trustee sales?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, this is not data that is proprietary to us, so I kind of look at it when it comes out like everybody else does. So it may be a little bit of kind of the pig in the python situation where you had a lot of people going into NODs and immediately going into foreclosure because they were investors and they just wanted to get the pain out quickly a year ago, and now it's you know, more homeowners who are trying to hang on and that. But I'm really not 100% sure what the long-term relationship has been. Certainly, every property that goes into NOD does not end up in foreclosure. But I believe that percentage varies over time depending on the market.
That was really the point of the question. In an article that came out, and it has been repeated, that there's a statement that a very small percentage of initial foreclosures end up going to trustee sale. And the truth is that it is a sliding scale, and one of the things that tips the scale to a very negative scenario is when you do not have price increases.
Yeah.
And so then you go from almost maybe 8 to 10% reaching the courthouse steps to something over 55%.
Right.
And that's significant if that becomes that big of a market. Well, we have to wrap up this segment. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm looking forward to continuing on the next show.
Thank you.
You bet.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.